So talking to you about what we do with all this wonderful data we're going to get with ATST. You've seen some of these movies before, some of the exciting science, the H-beta filtergrams with the VBI scans through the chromosphere. Over here on at the limb, you see a scan through the H-alpha line, seeing the variety of structures that you'll be able to resolve with the tunable filter, and then going all the way up here to emission lines in the corona, being able to measure spectral properties, emission lines, velocity, spectropolar imagery in the corona. So a lot of exciting science. And as Ali was describing with the service mode, we're even enabling a lot of even new kinds of science. Service mode, of course, not only lowers that barrier of entry, allows people to design experiments, get good calibrated data more easily, but also enables studies of very infrequent events. You might have a proposal for looking at post-flare loops or sunspots in certain configurations that would be very hard to obtain at high resolution right now, with the current scheduling. But with a service mode, you could have that there on standby for suitable opportunities. And then you move on to possibilities in service mode, because the PI doesn't have to be there. You can start to look at long-term synoptic programs with a high-resolution telescope. So looking at polar fields over a long time period, where you can get that high resolution and really resolve the fields in the poles or in sunspots. And so that's another kind of the science that will be enabled with ATST. And so all these will produce a lot of variety of data, very complex data, and a lot of it. So the sort of data volumes we're talking about are about 20 terabytes per day on average over the course, over the year. That leads up to 3 to 5 petabytes. So, it's already a manageable quantity of data in 5 years. 3 to 5 petabytes will be sizable, but not too frightening at this point. One thing will, with the service mode, there'll be different observing programs run during the day. You'll be changing instruments, not instrument setups, but you'll be running different programs, maybe running different instruments, on the disk, and then switching to coronal studies later on in the day. So that introduces complexity in the data stream. And then as Tom was describing, combining these instruments, multiple spectral lines, you're spanning through the whole range of the solar atmosphere with one observation, or that really introduces a lot of issues in how you align these data, combine them into sort of a coherent data set. And those coherent data sets and those data products are really the goal of what the data center needs to produce. He wants to take those data, generate them, and distribute them out to the community. And just to give you a broad brush overview of how the data center will sort of work, the data will be transferred from the telescope up on the mountain to perhaps through an intermediate stop on Maui, but then onto the NSO data center at headquarters. The only sort of exception to that is that broadband VBI data will be largely reduced up on the mountain to cut down that data volume significantly, and that's how we get down to 20 terabytes a day, is by speckle processing that data on the mountain. There'll be calibration recipes, processing pipelines, again, as Tom alluded to, try to reduce most of the data sets, at least those that follow certain sort of setup and calibration guidelines, producing these standard observables. And then there'll also be a set of quality assurance procedures as you obtain the data, as you go through the processing, to make sure that the data is all good scientific quality. So, when we talk about observables or data products, there's a whole range of options and different levels of data products we can generate. And sort of break these down, I think, into sort of three classes. You have, the basic is to get calibrated data. So you take your raw data taken at the telescope, correct for instrumental signatures, define your spatial and spectral coordinates, correct any, as many photometry issues as you can get, so you have good photometry, stable photometry throughout the data set, and that's sort of your basic calibration. One thing we've seen a lot of in this meeting is people applying feature recognition algorithms and extracting information on features within their data set. We've seen people doing that with chromospheric brightenings, loops, coronal loops, chromospheric loops, sunspots, and so on. So that's there's a lot of effort there, a lot of scientific drivers for trying to, extract features from these data. And so that's another area of kind of data product you could generate even from these ATST data. And the last one is, inversions of the spectral profiles, fitting of different parameters to try to actually extract physical quantities from your observations. And the bottom there is an inversion of the helium 10830 filament on the disk done by Rebecca Centeno and Roberto Cassini, and so you get magnetic field, inclination, and strength out. And so that's sort of a third class of kind of data products you could think of generating with ATST data. Now, of course, these are things we could generate. It's not clear we have be able to do all these things, certainly initially. It's a complex process. Ground-based data has the problem that you also have, all these seeing effects that increase the challenge in doing a lot of these things. So our primary goal, when we start operations, is to be able to do that first step, get the calibrated data where we have good instrumental calibrations applied to the data and have that as our primary data product, at least initially. But there is a lot of, effort being out there in the community, a lot of interesting algorithms being developed. In those second two, in the feature recognition, the inversion, at HAO, there's a whole center putting together all these inversion routines. And so we'd like to be able to put out some of the data sets we have from existing telescopes, a lot, for example, the service mode data, and make that available for people to start trying to apply their feature recognition and extraction techniques on existing ground-based data. So then we, move into operations with ATST, we can quickly move on to applying those to ATST data. So that's one thing we look forward to working on, providing those sort of standard data sets for people to look at. So as we define, though, which of these features and what kind of data products, we really do need community input. We've heard also a lot at this meeting that their budgets are tight now and, for the foreseeable future. So that really, we need to have some development priorities in what sort of things are really needed to enable, that very innovative science, what is gonna give us the best bang for the buck and what's gonna produce the most scientific output from ATST. So one way we're doing that is with the service mode is one avenue for us to do that. We're already seeing in that first service mode call, we had, there were some experienced observers, but we had new people who had never used DST before. And so that gives us a good way to, see what it's like when new people come in and try to use these data. Working on development of, some quality assurance and, quick look kind of tools for the high resolution data. Data delivery issues. We were taking, 1 terabyte a day of data right now in the service mode, and we were able to, deliver those data over the network, transatlantic, transferring 1 terabyte of data a day to an investigators in Europe. So, looking at how much data is reasonable to transfer over the network. And then, moving on to try to incorporate these service mode data and allow them to be discovered through VSO and HEC and so HelioViewer. So I guess I'll just want to go through and as a part of this look at some of the different usage scenarios that we might expect for ATST and try to figure out which of those are most important to the community, which of those are of interest to you, the users, and also if you think we're missing any major usage scenarios here, let us know. So I'll go through a few different use cases here of ways we, you know, investigators might go use the data center, get data, and address some questions, scientific questions. So the first case is the most obvious one. You're a proposer, and you want to find out, is your proposal, what's the status of the proposal, and eventually get your data. So you go in and you submit your proposal. You want to find out, was it accepted? There's some preparation, perhaps, as the data moves into being ready for acquisition. As the data is acquired, you get quick look images so you can assess the quality. That data calibration and processing may take a significant amount of time, depending on what the what algorithms are applied. If you're some of these inversions or image reconstruction can be very compute intensive, so you want to sort of be able to follow that and then get those data delivered to you. And so that's one sort of usage scenario. So do a quick experiment here. So how many people would envision that they would be investigators of ATST and would want to be a proposer and query the database? I mean, are we all see a show of hands here of who thinks they would that kind of usage scenario? Okay. So another case is where you would come in and say, okay, there were some flares on the sun, or I have a list of observations with another instrument, and I want to try to, find out were there any corresponding ATST observations, and that could be, even providing a list of observations or features. And so that would, you would come in and try to find supporting ATST observations based on your provided list. So let's see another show of hands there. Some people would, like that kind of usage, okay. And so the third case would be where, as we talked about, if you have these feature lists, if you know what the content is of some of the different data sets, you could come in and say, I want to, sunspots, observe sunspots, their observations of sunspots at the limb, right before flares, or polarity inversion lines, coronal loops, a whole variety of, if you have these feature lists available, then you could sort of start doing searches on the content of the data and try to find features of interest that way, provide additional constraints. I want to observe it with this instrument and this wavelength, and so on. So, that's sort of a third kind of usage scenario we would, like to eventually support with the data center. So another show of hands here. Okay, a few more people like that kind of feature-based searching. And so case four is sort of a build-on of that, starting to, do really archival science and, especially after we've been, ATST has been operating for a few years, you have a large sort of range of observations, a lot of different features, you can start to go in and try to extract a sort of statistical sample. Pete mentioned the other day and showed that nice result with this broad statistical sample where it starts to give you a little more reliability, put error bars on things. And so you would be able to, define your features of interest and then go in and extract this, a large number, 100 sunspot observations, and start to look at those. This is, you can think of continuing the work of Matt and Bill, and that would go on, and you could sort of start to look at sunspots over the cycle and, field strengths. So these kind of statistical studies. So another show of hands here on a few people like that. Okay. One problem there is, if you want 100, sunspot data sets, well, now you're talking, a lot of data. That's a maybe a petabyte of data or something, and it's really hard to see how you could actually deliver those kind of data, to the user, those kind of volumes. And so you may have to work with the user, you may have to have, a facility where you could, try to run their algorithms and extract certain parameters from those data locally at the data center, have people, visitor program where people would come and interact locally with the full data set, the full archive. And so the final case is extracting a data set through a unique identifier. So this is an area that's of interest a lot in the, informatics, library science, and talking about being able to, for example, in your paper, provide an identifier. This was the data set I used. Everyone can go back, pull that data out of the archive, and try to, you know, build on your work or reproduce it, disprove it. But being able to have that way to, you know, data traceability, you know, from the acquisition to publication. And, you know, that's a challenge in astronomy, especially, you know, in solar, where we have these poorly bound data sets. There's no well-defined data set. You may take, you know, one image, you may take a whole series of them. And so there's, you know, issues there. But the last one, if any interest in that kind of, you know, checking up on your colleagues? Okay, so I mean, these are the, you know, primary sort of usage scenarios we would, you know, be looking at for the data center and in building up to supporting all of these eventually. And so I'll just finish up, you know, conclude. ATST is going to support this broad variety of science, you know, from the photosphere up into the corona, on all sorts of time domains, from seconds, you know, out to years. And, you know, the NSO data center, you know, its goal is to, you know, try to support as much of that diversity as possible. And, you know, we're going to be developing those priorities with community input, and that's going to come through, you know, other missions and archives, their experiences, the service mode, and your input. So let us know. Thank you very much.
So I have a comment and a question. Your last case is very important as we move forward because calibrations change and, you know, somebody did work on one calibration set and then it changes and somebody says, no, you're wrong. But, you know, we have to be able to go back and find what people actually use, not what we think they use today. The question is, what's the data policy? Is it open? Is there a proprietary period? Is it a hybrid of that?
I mean, I think we want it to be open. There are higher level policy issues that may, you know, impact that. But I think, you know, our thought moving forward is that it will be largely open data policy, and, you know, so all the data will be available. You know, there may be some, you know, exclusions for PhD students, like there is with Hinode or something, but. You know.
Okay, if there are no more questions, or one more question, and maybe Mark, can you already set up?
Just roughly, how much will this cost the observatory to do, and what fraction of their resources will be put to this?
I think the operationally, it's about 10%. Kind of thing of the in terms of just operating the basic data center.